You may have seen this last week, there was a surprising and stunning archaeological discovery in central France. It was at what was the largest medieval monastery at Cluny. And there's a team of archaeologists, students, and professors from the University of Lyon. They've been systematically excavating different parts of it, but this came as total shock. Because as they were digging, they came across something solid. And they dug around and brought it up, and it was, well, at one point it was a bag made out of cloth. But what is there now is over 2,000 silver coins, 21 golden dinars from Morocco and from Spain, and a gold signet ring, and much, much more. Now, this was among the last things that they were expecting to find in this medieval monastery. And they're very excited about it because it will give them a glimpse into how money was minted during this time, and then how it traveled. That was exciting, I'm sure, but for me this week, as I've been walking around in this parable, that's not what had me excited. I was really curious. How did this happen? Right, let's imagine ourselves into the 13th century. Right? This is 800 years ago. How does this bag of cloth with this treasure come to be buried? Was it a monk who came from a very wealthy family and brought some of this with him, you know, just kind of hedging his bets? This may not work out as planned. Or maybe it was this monk was the last of the line in the family. These were the family treasures that were going to go to somebody. Maybe this was a monk that traveled a lot in the exchange of illuminated manuscripts and had a little side business. Or maybe it was a monk that pilfered from the common purse a few coins at a time, hidden away. Maybe it was meant to be used for the poor, and they were just waiting for the right time. One thing is sure, we will never know. Because the person or people who buried this treasure died before they could tell anyone. What we do know is that these things of tremendous value never were used. And they're there waiting. And so I've been wondering this week, what would it take for me to gather together all these very valuable things and bury it? What would have to happen for me to do that? What about you? What would it take for you to find these things that are of great value to you and to take it, dig a hole, and leave it there? Now, for those of you who come to church on Sunday morning, and as you're coming here, navigating the Berkeley Half Marathon, if you're thinking to yourself, gosh, I really hope we have another one of those stories that ends with the weeping and gnashing of teeth. Well, we've had a month for you. Because this is the end of the liturgical year, right? In a few weeks, we're going to start in again with Advent. Well, this is the end of the year, and so we're finishing up our travel through Matthew's Gospel. And for the last couple of weeks and into next week, we'll be in the 25th chapter. And there's a lot of weeping and gnashing of teeth. Last week it was the parable of the bridesmaids. This week the parable of the talents. Next week it's that ultimate judgment with Jesus, the sheep and the goats. And those who don't know where they've seen Jesus, he says, well, I was there in the those who were hungry and thirsty, naked, those who you would have visited in prison or who were sick. That's where I was. And so anytime we come to these stories that are bizarre or challenging or both, I wonder why. Why do we have these stories? Right? Because for a community, any community, to hold on to a story enough to be able to pass it on generation to generation, it takes real intention. This does not happen by chance. So why? Why tell these stories? I think it has to do with the community that produced this gospel. You see, they were waiting and waiting. This was likely a couple of generations of waiting, not just weeks or months, but like years, decades, waiting for Jesus to return. And I would imagine, if their waiting is anything like my waiting, that after you've waited for a while, your attention begins to wane. And so, they've got these stories. If you were one of these people who has waited for decades and, you know, you're kind of tired, you might need to hear a story about waiting because in the deep of night, Jesus will return and you should be prepared. Or maybe if you were waiting for Jesus to come down, you know, one idea has him coming down, descending in clouds in great majesty. If you're waiting for that and it hasn't happened yet, you might need a story about how the Christ is present in people in pain around you. And if you've been waiting, you might need a warning or a guideline or a bound or a story. If you are afraid to take a misstep, if you have been waiting so long that you are building longer walls or higher walls to bunker yourself against the world, you might need a story about a master who has gone on a long journey and about the people who are left behind to keep the faith. Because this story is not a story about greed or about laziness or about abilities. It's a story about fear. That is what animates this third slave. He's afraid. With the kind of fear that comes when we are asked to risk something that really, truly matters. Have you come across that fear? The fear that I felt like this, it kind of settles in the pit of your stomach. It doesn't matter about what kind of amounts you're asked to risk. It's that risk, that fear that something is being asked of you and you're not quite sure if you can make it. For me, it happened when we were getting married, when I was being asked to follow this path to the priesthood, to have children, to come to this position at All Souls. When we were faced with the restructuring of this parish, when we had this opportunity to build affordable housing, all of these times there was tremendous risk and attending fear. And I was not clear about which way to go forward. Have you encountered this? What do you do with it? How do you continue forward? Because while I would love this to be differently, I know that many times in my life I have chosen to play it safe. Right? When faced with these two options, the risky option and the safe option, it's so much easier just to slide over to the safe way. But it's not even just those two options. It seems like every time within our decisions there is this safe place to go to push aside the risk. And I understand it, right? I feel it, because with risk comes the distinct possibility of loss. We don't want to lose. And the problem, I think, with this parable is it doesn't totally give us this picture, right? Because the two people who risked, they gained. That's fantastic. But what happens when you risk something that really matters to you? Your privilege, your money, your relationship. And it doesn't turn out the way you want. What happens when you take a risk for this realm? Is it weeping and gnashing of teeth? Is that what we're to expect? And I don't think so. Because notice that when the two slaves come back, or the master comes back and he finds them and they have risked all, what the master doesn't say is, "Well done, you're so intelligent," or "What a shrewd person you are," or "What great strategy you employed." No, the master says that they are trustworthy. That they are trustworthy. And the Greek underneath that is pistos, which can also be known as faithful. That while he was away, they quite literally kept the faith. That they trusted in this realm of heaven enough that they were willing to risk the extraordinary gifts that they had been given, that we have been given. And that's what this life is about, what this incarnation is about. It's about risk. It's why we hear these parables at this point in the account of Matthew's gospel. This is the 25th chapter. What comes next is the plot, the betrayal, the arrest. When Jesus tells these stories, he knows exactly what is happening next. He is about to risk not one or two or five. He's about to risk all the talents. He's about to risk the lives of the people he loves. He's about to risk not just his existence, but everything he stands for on the power of God's love. That's why two generations later, they were still telling this story. And it's why 2,000 years later, we are still telling this story. Because we have been given so much. If there's judgment here, it's because there is so much need and we have been gifted. And so the question that accompanies this story, whether 2,000 years ago or today is the same. What are you willing to risk for this realm?